Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
I don't believe what I just saw.
A division of Bell Media.
ESPN Radio.
Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
.10 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed the first hour, we were joined by Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com and Forbes Magazine. Now it's time to go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good to be here, guys.
How you doing, James? Thanks for joining us. James, let's start with the big news from the Senators' camp this week, and that was the signing of the much-sought-after college free agent Stefan DaCosta. Two-part question here. Why were the Senators so high on DaCosta, and how did they end up winning the battle for his services?
Hearing from the scouts and everything, they think he's got a good concept of the game. He reads the play really well and apparently has soft hands. I haven't seen him play at all, so I can't speak to any of that, but certainly they were excited to get him. And I guess one of the main reasons they were able to get him is he can come to sort of a well-respected franchise, and I think if you ask players around the league, Ottawa is that, even though they've had a down year. And that's one of the reasons he did come here, is because they've had a down year and they are rebuilding and there are spots for guys like him to make the team next year, and if not next year, the year after. I mean, there's no, you know, after you look at Spezza, Alfredson, and McCullough, those kinds of guys, I mean, there's a lot of open spots on the, you know, from line two down. So I think he was looking at it as an opportunity with the team, that has an opportunity to win in the future. And, you know, I mean, if you're trying to decide between teams that you have a chance, would you rather play for the Ottawa Senators or the New York Islanders, you know? So there's a lot of positives to coming here, and I think they probably sold him on that. And one of the interesting things I heard, too, was that he liked the idea that it was a bilingual city here because, as you know, he's from Paris, France, and doesn't speak all that much English. So I guess there's a comfort level with that, too.
It's a good point, and that can be an asset. James, the Senators recently signed Craig Anderson to a four-year extension. We haven't yet had you on the show since that he signed that. It was for a cap hit of about 3.18 per season. Can you give me the thought process behind the Senators signing Anderson to such a lengthy extension?
You had to pay him a bit of a premium, I think, for a couple of reasons. First of all, he could have just gone to a free agency in the summer, and you know, this year notwithstanding, and just to be completely upfront, I've always really liked Craig Anderson's game. I thought it was really shrewd when Colorado signed him out of Florida.
Absolutely.
He would have been playing more in Florida if he wasn't behind Thomas Bocoon. So and he showed that in his first year in Colorado when he pretty much single-handedly got them into the playoffs. I think people know that Craig Anderson is a good goaltender. And I think that the Senators had to pay a premium, A, to get him to sign now, and B, because he's not playing on a team that a lot of people are picking to win right now. So, that's important to some players. So I think everybody had their eyebrows raised with the term, especially since this team believes that Robin Lehner, who's playing in AHL Binghamton right now, is the goalie of the future. But I think that also speaks to the fact that they don't think he's close to being ready, so they need somebody. 4 years, a bit much probably for a lot of people, but sometimes you give up term to get a player signed.
And you guys had in the Citizen, you know, Leonard's response. I thought he handled it quite well, you know, maturity-wise, especially considering his age. How did you feel like he handled it?
I want to say handled it when, because I actually went down to Binghamton, I guess about a week and a half.
Okay.
A week before he signed, and I spoke to Robin Lehner, and he kind of was, you know, he was the old Robin Lehner. He's a very cocky kid, and said, "I hope they sign Anderson because I want to hunt him," and this sort of stuff, like really aggressive comments towards Craig Anderson, just about, you know, he'd be a great target. I actually said to him, you know, Craig Anderson's pretty big game to hunt, and he said, well, the bigger the game, the bigger the trophy, right? So
wow.
That's just the kind of kid Robin Lehner is, but I think he came up here after that and had a chat with Brian Murray, and, and you know, he came out and was a lot more humble after they actually signed Anderson. So, but don't believe for a second that Lehner, you know, isn't eyeing him right now and to get up here as soon as possible, because he's a really confident kid and he believes he deserves to be here even if the team doesn't yet.
James, with the moves that Brian Murray made at the deadline and some of these recent signings, Craig Anderson and Stefan DaCosta, can we finally put to bed all the rumors that he won't be back next year as the GM?
I don't see how he wouldn't be. I mean, you don't, if he's an actual lame duck mm-hmm. general manager, mm-hmm. and usually they just fire those guys right away, you know, he wouldn't have the freedom to go sign all these players and to ship out six guys in February and make all these moves. So I think it is pretty safe to say Brian Murray will be back next year. And it's kind of funny in this city because people have a real love-hate relationship with the Murrays. And I'm talking Brian and his son Tim who's his assistant and also the GM of the farm team. You know, people seem to really love or hate the guys. But and I really felt like, you know, and initially when it looked like you'd be staying, people seemed really upset by it. But we just had a poll on our website asking if people thought Brian Murray deserved another contract based on all these moves, and like 85% said they wanted him to stay. So it's a bit of a weird situation, and you know, I mean, based on the moves, you might say, yeah, he deserves a shot at sticking around, and it looks like to me that's what's going to happen.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. James, along those same lines, you know, Corey Kluson's job security has also been a topic of conversation for the past year. How do you see? Do you see him returning as the head coach of the Senators next season?
I honestly have no idea with that one, and I don't think anybody does, because you know, Kluson didn't just forget how to coach. I mean, last year he took the team to the playoffs mm-hmm. when they weren't expected to do all that much. And this year he was saddled with an aging lineup that wasn't performing. And you know, you see, it always goes back to the goalie, I think. I mean, they sign Anderson and they're winning right now. So a goalie can make a coach look like an idiot or a genius. And Brian Elliott had one of the worst seasons I've ever seen out of a goaltender, and the Senators paid for that, too. So it's not all blame the goalie, but I think people who watched the whole season would say that they did lose their fair share of games because of soft goals and that sort of thing, and you see they're winning a lot with Anderson in there. So who knows? Maybe Kluson's getting a little sympathy for struggling through that part and showing that he can win when he has a roster that can perform for him.
How does the, you know, you talk about the performance since obtaining a goaltender, and it's been quite good, James. I mean, are the fans, is there a little bit of a backlash from the fans, the fact that this team has moved up from, you know, second worst in the league to now fourth worst, and if they could pass the Islanders and become the fifth worst team, and that's just only going to hurt their draft, you know, their pick in the draft?
Yeah, I think initially there was a lot of that when they started climbing up, but nobody really thought they would climb this far up. When it was sort of a, well, it's okay if we finish second or second last instead of first last.
That's right.
But, you know, as they keep winning, people are just getting more excited about the team playing well, and they're looking forward to next year, whereas, you know, a month ago people were thinking, you know, is it going to be 2-3 years of pain here before they start winning again? So the fact they're winning now when they have a legitimate number one goaltender and they have some kids who are playing really well, they like it now, I guess. There's always the jokey comments about why aren't they tanking, but I think the people who are seriously upset about that are over it, because, I mean, the number one is and number two now are pretty much completely out of reach. So,
right.
You know, once you get into the middle of the top 10 there, you know, it's not a huge difference.
Even if the top, you know, top three or four, there is arguably a top four group there this year, so they could be okay in that regard. You know, is there a position that the Senators are going to be targeting in the draft? I mean, you know, it looks like their goaltending for the foreseeable future is settled, so that's probably not an issue. I guess you're really deciding between defense and goaltending, and they do have some prospects of both. Do you think the team's looking to add a forward, or?
Well, you would think so. I mean, I think a lot of GMs go for the best player available, and I would guess that Brian Murray would do that. But, yeah, I mean, if you look at at the defensive prospects they have now. You have Erik Karlsson, mm-hmm. who is already an all-star.
He's great.
You have Jared Cowan, who's expected to make the team next year. You have David Rundblad playing in Sweden, who's also expected to make the team. You have Chris Phillips signed. You know, they're pretty well set at defense, I think, for next year with the prospects they have and the guys they have signed. And you look at the forwards, and they've found some good pieces. You know what I mean? It's not, there's nobody really blue chip exciting, though, in terms of scoring. And it's a problem that a lot of people, I think, identified a few years ago, but the Senators just, you know, didn't build this forward core where people could step in when guys like Alfredson were needing to retire, and you know, they were signing Kovalev, and he's obviously gone, but there was nobody ready to come up and step in a year or two. So they have a lot of good depth guys now, but they do need some high-end forward prospects now.
Last question here, James. Milan Mihailovic was sort of one of the keys in the Danny Heatley deal. I mean, his injury concerns are well documented. Going forward, is that anything the team gets out of him really a bonus at this point, or are they expecting him to resume and have a big role?
I think they'd love that, but I don't know if it's going to happen. I think Milan Mihailovic is what he is. He's not ever going to be sort of a dominant player. I think they'll be happy to get a guy who can stay healthy and, you know, score 20 plus goals a year and be a contributor on the top two lines. But again, I don't think he's the kind of player who you're going to, I would say, build around as a main piece.
James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. You keep me up to date on those Jets things, okay?
No problem.
I want to know what's happening.
Just follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. You already do, so you just keep
it. Yeah, he's doing it. No, we'll give you all the updates, James. We're hoping to have some news here within the next month or so.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks,
appreciate
James.
Bye.
Take care.
Great guest as always, and really insight. You know, the auto situation is, since we've had James on, what time is it? How many times has he been on the show now?
This is his fifth or sixth, according to my running tally of guests.
It's great of him to give us time that much to us. But you think about it from last year to this year, playoffs, overcoming, overachieving last year, this year, just tanking, the questions about the coach, the situation has changed in our interviews with James so many times.
Yeah.
He said it's an interesting team to follow. And you look at his team and he talks about Rundblad and he talks about Karlsson, he talks about Cowan. And then you have,
What of all those guys that we didn't get a chance to ask him about, Richie, like these guys like Condra, Greening, Butler, these guys aren't going to be the best players.
Well, Butler's
But the thing is, Corey Kluson's probably going to be back next year. We're kind of, it's leaning, maybe not, okay, maybe
there's
not.
There's rumors that Dave Cameron might take over, but there's also that rumor that Dave Cameron and Pierre Maguire are going to come in together.
Right, but regardless, the team has...
Boom! The monster! He's a monster!
Boom goes with dynamite. But the thing is, the team has now changed because they're rebuilding. They've moved out the veterans.
But it can be a quick rebuild, can it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Ottawa might even be a team that can compete more for a playoff spot than a Toronto next year. They're in a better position, maybe.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that.
Leonard Anderson in net. You've got some up-and-coming young defensemen and forwards. Might not be that bad then.
And with all their trades, they have two first-rounders this year.
They have a great bunch of...
I think they have two second-rounders this year.
Yeah, they got a second-rounder for Campoli, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. And Kelly was also a second-rounder, was he not?
That's right.
So, I mean, this year, next year, whatever it may be, they're loaded.
The rebuild might be quick in Ottawa.
And you know what? When you have young talent like Karlsson, Rundblad, Butler, now DaCosta, Cowan, Leonard.
They all slot in.
Hey.
They all slot in. Leafs
don't have that kind of young talent.
No, and they don't have any draft picks either.
And they have five draft picks in the first, I think, first two rounds this year, Ottawa. And what do the Leafs have? They have Philly's first pick.
Yeah, they have two maybe. They have Boston's first pick.
But they don't have their own, which is the one they want.
Yeah,
they have both. So there you go, so they have two. But granted, Ottawa's going to be in the top five. Those other ones are going to be in the bottom 23 to 30.
Exactly. Let's go to break. When we come back, statistically speaking, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:45 in the morning.
What song is that, Drew?
That is Crazy Train?
Hot for Teacher. Crazy Train.
You know I don't know music. Why would you put me on
Crazy
the spot
Train?
Like that? Drew. Why would you put me on the spot
Dude,
like that?
That's embarrassing.
You're embarrassing. Why are you wearing a toque inside?
My hair's crazy.
Well, get a haircut. And you want to be my lawyer.
And you want to be my latex salesman.
Exactly. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the program so far, we have heard from Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com and Forbes Magazine. We just heard from James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. Both of those interviews will be available for download on iTunes at Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael Remus, you're operating our desk in the Illegal Curve chat room. What's happening over there?
Hey, guys. Some great discussion going on in the Illegal Curve chat room. I'm leading the chat over there. I don't know, all the talk about the time with the glow puck and everything.
Glow puck.
I don't know, it came up, but that was a really bad idea. But we took posting all the articles and videos that we're talking about, and, you know, after the show, go to illegalcurve.com. I posted all the links about today's topics.
That's excellent. Go to www.illegalcurve.com.
Yeah.
Join in on the chat room or go there after the show, and you can find out everything you missed in case you missed any of the show. And you can always tweet us at Illegal Curve, like Timo Seppa has done, our good friend. He's tweeted at Illegal Curve. And Alex Klagus at Illegal Curve, thanking us for the Sens talk here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, until there's an NHL team here in Winnipeg, you're going to hear the best hockey talk about all 30 NHL franchises.
And if we get a team, we'll still talk about all 30 teams, Drew.
Of course we will. Of course we will. But we might become a little bit more local if that happens. You know, it'll be
I'm
hard.
Not going to let anything get
it'll
in the
be
way
hard
of us talking
be,
about every team.
It'll be hard to remain as impartial as we currently
We're
are.
We're going division by division. We're going
Drew, what's your Twitter relationship with Andrew Coyne like right now?
I like Andrew. I like his writing on Twitter. That's a little awkward. Coming
Who's
out
Andrew
of nowhere.
Coyne? Who's that?
Andrew Coyne is the national editor or the national columnist for McLean's Magazine, one of the preeminent political writers of our time.
Oh, so he's kind of like you.
Yes, except on a much larger basis. He's a Winnipegger also. Good Winnipeg boy.
Really?
Yeah. Good Winnipeg boy, that
Andrew.
Is he voting
conservative like you?
Andrew probably doesn't. I don't know if he votes. I'm certainly not voting conservative, so I don't know what you're talking about. But, you know, let's not talk politics because I'd like to remain on the show, remain on the air after this week's shows. Otherwise, I might get a little too heated in here.
True, let's just say you're close to your expiry date.
Oh, that's uncalled for, Richard. That's quite uncalled for. Let's go on to statistically speaking. You think you're funny. Nobody else does, but that never stopped you before. You know.
Just say as he's moving into your seat soon, you better watch
it. I'll tell you what, I'm choking on my rage over here, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Campbell and Christian Ehrhoff start in the offensive zone over 60% of the time.
And, you know, that goes to the point, Drew, we talked about last week in terms of Henrik Sedin starting 70% of the time. What that means is, what that stat is, just to explain it, is that means you take out the neutral zone faceoffs, it means offensive zone faceoffs ratio towards defensive zone faceoffs. So when we say 60%, we say 60% of the faceoffs without the neutral zone taken into account are in the offensive zone as opposed to only 40 in the defensive zone. What that generally means is we're talking here about two of the top offensive players on the top teams, right? Vancouver and Chicago.
Yeah.
Ehrhoff is an offensive player, and so is, you know, Ehrhoff's an offensive player, and so is Brian Campbell. But they're also defensively, they're lacking. And I've talked about in the show many times the fact that they're both defensively, they're not inept, but they're certainly not capable of the, you know, logging the responsible minutes that some other guys are or the situations. And so what you're seeing is Alain Vigneault and Joel Quenneville obviously recognizing that. I mean, they're the coaches of the team, but they're putting them in situations where there's less pressure to succeed defensively, and they're utilizing them in the correct manner. And there's a great article on Hockey Prospectus by Tom Awad, who's like one of the top writers on the site. He wrote about how Vancouver utilizes their players. How they log big minutes with Sedin's in the offensive zone, offensive draws, and guys like Malhotra defensively, and how Kessler's really running, as he said, really running the show because he can play in every situation.
Right.
The Malhotra loss is significant, but you're also seeing through this how they play their defensemen too.
Keeping them into their strength, which is very important.
Exactly.
Not putting them in vulnerable positions.
Exactly right, and that's to me that's very interesting.
Yeah.
And I hope the listeners feel the same.
That's very good. Do you want to talk about your Hockey Prospectus article right now? Or do you want to do that later on in the show?
Which you have been bugging us all week. I mean, now that I'm a working man, it's tough to read your articles. Let's start. This is what I've been saying the whole time. Richard Pollock. We should start at RichardPollock.com, an offshoot of IllegalCurve.com, have our... Actually, why don't we just link the articles on Illegal Curve? Why haven't we been doing that? I'll do that.
You want to do that?
Yeah. Why don't we just start having your articles posted on the website? Cross-promotion.
We'll see. Well, anyways, keep going here.
You should. Okay. Everyone out there should read it.
Nicklas Lidström faces the highest quality of competition in the NHL and highest quality of competition relative to Corsi of all NHL defensemen. Perhaps you want to explain
Corsi. Not to be confused with Shane Corson or Daniel Corso.
Quality of competition is we're going to have Gabe on next week. We're going to ask him to explain that further. But it means, you know, versus everybody in the league, Nicklas Lidström is playing against as tough a competition as you're going to get.
as good as you're going to get in terms of the guys he's playing against. And secondly, Corsi is, you know, who's driving the play. Driving the play in the positive direction, you know, moving the puck forward as opposed to having, you know, shots for as opposed to shots against, plainly. Okay? Lidstrom is playing against the best players in both in terms of both metrics. He is playing as tough position you're going to get. He plays against the best players. You have Cronwell there. You have guys like that. Stewart there. It doesn't matter. Lidstrom is still playing against top players all the time. And they're playing against good teams. They play in a good division. He is logging as tough minutes as you are going to get. And he needs to get full credit for that. To me, he's my Norris Trophy. I don't care about his plus-minus, which isn't great. I don't care about that. He's my Norris Trophy winner. He can drive the puck offensively. He plays in every situation. You know, some other guys, like Buffalo, and the talk for them was ridiculous earlier. We mentioned that at the time. I think we've been vindicated now.
Certainly.
In terms of the Buffalo talk. A guy doesn't play on the penalty kill. He's a liability in his own zone. We talked about that with Gabe, and statistically speaking, a couple weeks ago, or a month or two ago. Regardless, Lidstrom's minutes is heavy sledding.
If Vancouver faces Chicago in the first round, that would be a matchup of the best two NHL power plays. In penalty kill, however, the Canucks are the best, and the Hawks are lowly 25th.
And when we get down to, you know, if they do end up matching up, we're going to break down the series.
Absolutely.
And we go by, obviously, many factors that are involved here.
Are we going to go series by series, team by team?
We are absolutely going to go series by series, team by team, Drew, to play on the ad. But you look at the, you know, look at the power plays here. Okay, you know, those basically offset, right? You're talking about as good, but, you know, that doesn't, by the way, it doesn't necessarily translate, you know, power play success in the regular season to the playoffs. I think
sure.
Gabe's talked about that before. But regardless, I mean, you're talking about, you know, offensively very talented teams. Defensively, though, you have to wonder, I mean, can they, you know, if Chicago's penalty kill is so bad and Vancouver's power play is already so good, are they going to be in trouble? I mean, is that going to be one of the deciding factors? Chicago looks like, not necessarily firmly entrenched in their slot, but they very well could finish 8th. Vancouver's already clinched, so they're number 1. That's something to take into account. When you look at the team, and you look at the lack of Malhotra, just quickly looking at those teams, the big difference for me would probably be goaltending. But other factors like faceoffs and like power play and penalty kill are going
to
be involved.
Yeah, to further your point, Richie, about you know, Chicago and Vancouver matching up, it's not a good matchup for them.
No.
And, you know, things like penalty kill are huge when you consider Vancouver's dominant on the penalty kill. Chicago's struggled all year.
That's right.
I think that you look at Vancouver, we talked about Phoenix and Detroit. Phoenix taking a step back and Detroit improving. Vancouver's improved. Their defense has improved. They've had injuries, but also they've gotten way better at faceoff. You look like a guy like Kessler, and that's why I keep focusing on...
You lose him.
Yeah, you lost Malhotra, but a guy like Kessler, I think, this year elevated both of his games.
I agree.
I don't think his offensive numbers are actually as high as they were last year, but his goal total's up. But when you look at the guys that they have, their penalty killing is so dominant, and that's why I still think Vancouver will beat Chicago if they match up in the first round. It'll be a tough opponent, but that's a huge factor, and you're right. Roberto Luongo is a very good penalty killer. I mean, he's Corey Crawford. People are forgetting that Corey Crawford's a rookie.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's the biggest difference for me.
When you have a guy like Luongo as your fifth penalty killer, that's huge.
Pittsburgh leads the NHL in road hits. Anaheim leads the NHL in road blocked shots.
We talk about road because there is a home bias. Teams like the Rangers, who are high in hits and blocked shots, mind you. There's a bias in terms of, like, you know, Madison Square Garden counting hits a little bit more and blocked shots in other arenas. Look at road, gives you a better idea because, you know, you're talking about different arenas all the time, mixing and matching, so there's no bias really involved, or it's minimal. Anaheim blocks a lot of shots, guys. That's important for the playoffs, too. That's important for penalty killing. You're getting in the lanes. You're getting in the way. That means your teams are willing to sacrifice your body.
Sure. I mean, I remember going back to, I guess, the Buffalo. I mean, when Buffalo made their run to the conference finals a couple years ago?
Against Carolina.
They seem to be blocking absolutely everything on their on the power play.
I don't have the stats
on the penalty kill,
but
I mean,
from just recalling back in the, you know, early 2000s, Dallas, which is because it got
right.
Darian Hatcher. You're talking the Ludwigs and all those guys. So those are factors to take into account. Looking at the road gives you a better idea. And obviously hits. Pittsburgh's a physical team. Dan Bylsma stresses it seemed to play a very big up and down, a good up and down style, and move that puck in the right direction.
Right. Should be no coincidence that Pittsburgh has also taken the most minor penalties in the NHL. But let's go to the next one. I want to skip that one. We've talked about that before.
He just dropped it, so we're good.
Yeah, exactly. Brad Richards is 9th in the NHL in shots per game, which is interesting because people see him as a pass first player so.
You know, as you think about Brad Richards, you think about pass first, right? You think about a guy who sets up his line mate, sets up Louis Erickson and James Neal when he was there, right? He was the guy driving that bus in terms of the passing there. But he's taking a lot of shots. 9th most in the NHL in shots per game. And that's something to take into account. Maybe he's not as much of a pass-first player as you think. And his ability to play in both, you know, both scoring and passing, gives him, you know, makes him a dual threat. And, you know, we talked about it earlier with a useless player now like Scott Gomez. Scott Gomez doesn't present a threat offensively in terms of scoring now. He did that in New Jersey. It wasn't great, but it was better than it is now. And then you have Brad Richards, a guy like this who's able to pass. You know, they used to be probably close to equal passers, which is now superior. But the scoring threat needs to be there. Joe Thornton's always had a problem with this. You know, is the scoring threat there? And Joe Thornton, I have to check the numbers, but I think he's made a concerted effort to put the puck on net a little bit more. I might be wrong. I can check that in the break. But just be able to do, you know, when you're coming in, guys, like, and you're turning off, you know, you're turning off plays instead of shooting. That's a, you know, Alex Hemsky like to do that a lot, turning off instead of shooting. Doesn't mean he doesn't put the puck on net a lot, but the goalie knows that. Teams study the scouting reports. You have to be able to be a threat in both ways.
There you go. That's it for Stats Speaking for this Saturday morning. And, of course, if you missed any of them, they're all available on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. You can find all of the Stats Speaking. And before that, the six things we learned this week. Let's go to break. When we come back, James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final hour on this Saturday morning. Before we, I think Remus is trying to get James Myrtle on the line. Before we go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Hotline, Richie, you had some.
You know, talk about Joe Thornton maybe making an effort to try and get more shots. Joe Thornton's shots on goal have generally stayed pretty constant over the past few seasons. And his best season, not surprisingly, was the season that he had, at least in San Jose. Oh, no, career. His best season career-wise in the NHL was the season that he put the most pucks on the net. So you're watching the playoffs, and this is a, you know, you'll watch the playoffs, and I guarantee you there will be a play-by-play man or color guy who gets on Joe Thornton for turning away when he has a chance to shoot the puck and decides to pass or curl back and make a decision that's moving the play, you know, sideways, horizontal, not vertical.
Okay. Anyways, there you go. It's time to go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, James. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
Good.
James, you know, statistically, the Leafs still have a chance to make it. It's a long shot at this point. Are Leafs fans still clinging to that playoff hope, or have they sort of given up on the dream for this season?
Well, I think the reasonable ones realize that it's going to be a pretty slim chance. You know, people like myself have been telling them all along just how difficult it's going to be. Back when they had about 13 or 14 games left, said basically they can only afford to lose one or two more games the rest of the way. And I'm pretty sure they've lost at least two. They can still get to 90 points, but with the way the pace has picked up in the East with the Rangers and the Sabres, who have both played well, not lately, but before that, you know, they played well for a long stretch. It's probably going to take more than 90 points, and that's the max that the Leafs can get to. So, and the other thing, too, is that the Leafs don't really hold any of the tiebreakers right now. Winning in a shootout over Boston didn't do them any favors in terms of the tiebreakers because those shootout wins don't count. So it's going to be really tough. I think if they win their final four games, they've got something like a 20 or 25% chance of making it. So that's really all they can do, you know. And I think if they finish the season with 90 points, I mean, that's pretty incredible given where they came from.
James, Ron Wilson announced this week that he's going to be back. You know, just plainly, James, why is he going to be back?
Just because that, you know, Brian Burke is a pretty loyal guy. He's only fired one coach in his entire tenure as a GM. Ron Wilson had a four-year contract. And, you know, I think about halfway through Burke's tenure here, Brian Burke realized that this rebuild was going to take a little bit longer than he thought, that the roster that he had given Ron Wilson wasn't really that great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Burke thinks it's only fair to give Wilson 4 years, especially with the way that they've played over the second half of the season.
You know, there's certain aspects of the game that some, you know, some analysts deem coachable. And the Leafs have been pretty poor in that regard. Again, you know, penalty kill, for example, they're the fourth worst in the National Hockey League with a 78.2 percentage. Do you, you know, hold Wilson responsible for some of consistently struggling in certain categories? There you go.
Yeah, I do. You know, I do think that Wilson's responsible. You know, like the Leafs finished second last in the NHL last year, mm-hmm. and I really don't think there was that they were that bad of a team. You know, I think another coach could have maybe got more out of that group than Wilson did. But, you know, there were all kinds of wars going on with Ron Wilson and some of the veteran players. You know, a lot of the guys were really unhappy with the coach, and the coach was unhappy with them, and it was sort of an ugly situation last year. And I guess Wilson felt confident enough that he was going to be around longer than they were,
right.
and therefore, you know, he didn't need to make peace with some of these guys. Brian Burke traded away a lot of them, and then now Ron feels like he has his team. He's got a young group. He feels like they're all buying into sort of what he's selling as a coach. And, you know, they've had this second-half surge. So, but I do agree. I do think that the penalty kill and, you know, some of the power play problems. I think power play is partly personnel problems, mm-hmm. but the penalty kill definitely, I think, is a yeah. coaching issue for the entire staff, not just Wilson.
James, you've covered this a lot for the Globe and Mail this year. The Toronto Maple Leafs have basically had a conveyor belt of goaltenders this year. There's speculation that the Leafs want to pick up a veteran goaltender for next season. Do you think Francois Allaire's presence in Toronto is going to basically nullify any chance of Ilya Bryzgalov coming to Toronto?
That's the talk, yeah. I mean, I actually didn't know that until they talked about it on TSN there a couple days ago, just saying that Bryzgalov won't want to play for Allaire and vice versa. So, and the other thing that was problematic with bringing Bryzgalov to Toronto was the contract that he's going to want.
Mm-hmm.
If James Reimer can play, you know, maybe not quite this well, but if he can be a legitimate 1A or 1B sort of tandem goaltender, do you want to have Bryzgalov locked up on a big long-term contract for the next 4 years? You know, that's sort of, the Leafs feel like they've got some talent sort of at the minor league level in terms of in goal. Ben Scrivens, who's a free agent guy out of Cornell that they signed, has played really, really well in the minor league system. So I think they feel like they want to have some breathing room and some openings for these young guys, maybe not next year, but the year after. So I think probably what the Leafs are going to do, they're going to look for a veteran goaltender who can come in for 1 year, maybe 2 years, and hopefully split the starting duties with James Reimer. I think that's the smartest thing to do. Just going to have to wait and see if that's the route they go. I think if they go with Reimer and Jonas Gustafsson, I think that's only going to sort of spell mm-hmm. potential disaster if those two guys struggle.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail. Let's talk about James Reimer for a second. I mean, he is a Manitoba guy here, so you know we like to sort sure. of give our local boys a little bit of credit. We know that he's sort of been a huge surprise to the entire Leafs nation and the Leafs organization. Does he have what it takes to be a bona fide number one goalie in the NHL?
I don't know that we know that yet. I don't know that if that's knowable. I'd be surprised if you know, given his pedigree and everything, that he turns out to be a 30-win starter for the next 15 years or whatever. But sometimes with goalies, you don't know. The one thing that people, a lot of people said to me, you know, people that scouted Reimer when he was in junior and things like that, his background is so unique. He didn't start playing organized hockey till he was 12 years old. He didn't have a goalie coach really for a long, long time. His background is so unique that maybe he has that sort of number one talent, and it's just taking him a long time to realize it. And he's just one of those guys that slipped through the cracks a little bit and is going to work hard enough, because he's an incredibly hard worker. He's got like one of the best attitudes of anyone I've ever talked to in the NHL. He's a great, great person. That maybe he has the right head on his shoulders to do it and to keep improving. And, you know, he's only 23 years old, so maybe he can. You know, I'm sort of a bit cynical when it comes to goalies, because we've seen so many guys come in and have sure. a great start. I remember, you know, about a month ago I wrote a story about the last 15 goalies that have had a start like Reimer, a great first 15 or 20 games, and what happened over their careers. And there were guys in there like Patrick Laleem, there were all kinds of names in there, and most of them turned out to be NHL backups is what they turned out to be. There were, out of the 15 guys, there were two that really didn't have an NHL career hardly at all, that really only played really well for 30 games, and that was about all they had. And then there were two or three that have had really good careers as starters. So that's sort of the path that Reimer's following in, and I don't know if anyone knows exactly how good he's going to be.
James, let's look at the guys who play right in front of the defense, in front of the goalies, and that's the defensemen. It seems like ever since the trade deadline, Leafs captain Dion Phaneuf has really stepped up his game. Do you think that's a direct result to the departure of Thomas Caberle and Francois Beauchemin?
Not a lot of people are saying that, but I just don't. I don't know what about that would make Dion play so much better. I mean, Phaneuf, it's sort of like been night and day, really, the last couple of months, how well he's done. He looks the best I've ever seen Phaneuf look. I think he even looks better than when he was putting up all the points in Calgary. And the thing is, he's playing really well in his own end. They're playing him an average of 28, 29 minutes a night. He's not getting burned in his own end. He's playing against the other team's top line. Mm-hmm. He's playing with a rookie who's only played about 25 NHL games, and Keith Ollie as his D partner. I mean, it's incredible how well. I know it's only a 25-game stretch, and we don't really know how long it's going to last, but he's played really, really well. Maybe it is because Beauchemin's gone. You know, maybe Beauchemin wasn't the right partner for him. Maybe Phaneuf needs to be the guy, needs to feel like he's the leader, and he's the guy in charge of the defense corps and playing the big minutes and everything. Maybe that's good for his confidence or his ego or whatever, and that's why he's playing better. I don't know the reason, but he's played really, really well.
Another player that people write a lot about and, you know, go both ways is Tyler Bozak up front there. And, you know, Ottawa signed college free agent DaCosta recently, and Bozak was something like that, you know, 2 years ago, a similar signing. I like his playmaking ability and his passing. Obviously, you know, he's not the best in terms of shooting and converting opportunities. How do you see him, you know, moving forward? Do you see him as a possible second-line center for the team? Is he not that good? Is he better?
He's a work in progress. He's another guy that's hard to project. Bozak's not that young of a guy. I think he's 25. He might even turn 26, I think, in the offseason this year. So I just wonder if maybe he's got some more developing to do. His season this year has not been very good at all. The Leafs were hoping for 55, 60 points out of him. He's put up nowhere near that. He's a huge minus. He's one of the biggest minus players in the NHL. I don't think he's a fit with Phil Kessel. Just right. When they're out there together, it just spells disaster in terms of the puck going in their own net. So I don't think he could have a worse season than this next year. You know, I think there's going to be some progress. But I just wonder, I think they should probably bump him down to the third line and let him sort of develop into a player he's going to be, because he has some really nice parts to his game. You know, he plays really well on the penalty kill. He's one of the better faceoff players, better young faceoff men in the NHL. I think he's top 30 or top 40 in faceoffs. So there is some value there, but in terms of playing with someone like Kessel, they're just too big of a liability right now.
James, the Leafs have some cap space next year. Where do you think they're going to spend that free money?
It's a great question. That's a really good question. I think they may bring in a puck-moving defenseman to replace Caberle and play with Shen. I think they may look at someone like Christian Ehrenhoff, who's with the Vancouver Canucks, and because he played under Ron Wilson, and I think there might be a relationship there that they could use. He's going to want a lot of money, so that, you know, they could spend $4, 5, 6 million of that cap space on bringing in someone to replace Caberle, who's maybe a little bit more defensively sound than Thomas was here. And the other thing, I mean, they got to bring in more scoring help. They need to bring in a center. And I don't think they're going to be able to address that in free agency. So it's going to be a matter of trying to make a trade where they take on a lot of salary in terms of a center. So I think that's probably where they're going to use the cap space. And then they've got to sign Clark MacArthur, sign Luke Shen. Tyler Bozak needs a new contract. Carl Gunnarsson has played really well over the last 20 games, and I believe he needs a new contract. So, and James Reimer to sign him too, and we talked about the veteran goalie. So They're going to use up that cap space probably pretty fast.
James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for your time today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks James. Appreciate it, as always. James is really, I mean, he's been, I think it's the fourth or fifth time on the show with us, and he always gives great information.
Yeah, and he really has an idea of what's going on in Toronto, gives you a background of what's going on. You know, we talk about goaltending, offense, defense, coaching, GM, really getting into, you know, that's what we're trying to do on the show, and he gives us a really good idea of, you know, thoughtful analysis of the team.
Exactly. Let's go to break. When we come back after the commercial break, we're going to do drama in the desert, take some of your phone calls on that topic. Jerry Reinsdorf is back, apparently. You know, I don't know.
Jerry Reinsdorf's not back.
I think Dorf on golf is back. It was more likely than anything else. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 11:15 in the morning. Richard made a really an amateur mistake there
Epic
during
mistake.
The commercial break. just an amateur mistake that's gonna cost you, Richard. If anybody follows Richard on Facebook, you'll know what we're talking about. And of course, to all our fans on Twitter who are mocking me for not knowing Crazy Train, for not knowing Hot for Teacher and confusing it for Crazy Train, thank you very much. Boys, I do appreciate you throwing me under the bus as usual. Follow me.
True, your laugh sounded eerily similar to that creepy laugh he just played.
It really did. That was a very was that my creepy laugh there, Remus? No?
No, Chris Farley.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah, the similarities between me and Chris Farley are uncanny. At Illegal Curve is where you can find us on Twitter, facebook.com/illegalcurve.
Veronica Vaughn is one fine. No, yeah.
What's that from?
No. What? What's that? Remus, get in here.
Billy Mack.
Who is Matt Special?
Remus, get in here.
That I know. That's the church lady.
Drew doesn't even know where that Veronica Vaughn is from.
Never seen Billy Madison, Drew?
I've seen it. I don't memorize it.
What? It's a cult movie.
I'm far too classy to stoop to the level of you people.
You know, Drew, I just want to say I watched Happy Gilmore the other week, you know, with the sound off. I didn't even need the volume. I just said all the lines to myself.
Don't tell people that. Just for the record, don't tell people that.
I just said on the air.
Yeah, you did. Anyways, welcome back to the program. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. We'll spend the next 10 or so minutes before Chip Alexander comes on talking about the latest developments, so to speak, in the Phoenix Coyotes saga.
Apparently, Jerry Reinsdorf ordered a corned beef sandwich in an Arizona deli.
Really? That means he bought the team. Did you know that? By ordering that corned beef sandwich. Does anybody, Gary Lawless, our colleague here on 1290, reported it. Apparently it was Darcy Olson from the Goldwater Institute who gave him that information. Right. Does anybody believe that Jerry Reinsdorf is actually back in this?
Of course, if Jerry Reinsdorf is in it, he would want the same kind of subsidies.
Right.
That was proposed earlier.
Like, yeah.
And subsidies and the financing from Glendale is the main reason why Goldwater is suing in the first place.
That's right.
Is Jerry Reinsdorf going to suddenly buy a team that loses $40 million a year as a smart, shrewd businessman to lose it for what? For what? I mean, come on, let's be logical here. Logic dictates that he would never do that. First of all, it's been 2 years. Why would he suddenly do it now? He's already bailed on Batman on that regard. He's not. He can be Batman's friend, but friends, $40 million between friends. You know that actually is.
I lent you $35 million the other week, our friendship's never been the same.
Exactly, and that's the issue. What's going on there, Drew? The truth is, it doesn't seem like anybody's buying these bonds. I think right now a lot of the stuff that's said is completely and totally being made up.
Time is running out.
Those clips never get old.
Let's be honest. I mean, I think it's being made up. I think it's made up.
If they go out in the first round, if the Coyotes go out in the first round, or as soon as they are out of the Stanley Cup Finals, how quickly thereafter do you expect a resolution?
Pretty soon after. Within a week, probably.
Really?
They need to be sold.
Time is running out.
Time is running out.
You know what I think? I think where we're at in this whole situation, I think we're Gary Bettman has a lemonade stand, and Bill Daly is helping him out with that lemonade stand, but they're all out of lemonade, and they're still trying to sell lemonade.
Okay, we can stop the show now. We're never going to be able to beat that analogy.
Does that help you understand the situation?
Not in the least bit, but I'm totally on board with whatever you're saying.
I just don't think...
Do you have any lemonade you can give me right now? That's really what I want to know at this point.
Do you have any lemonade packets available?
Drew's the only one who turns lemonade into lemons.
I don't know what that means either.
You're very, very angry today, Drew.
I'm not angry at all. I'm loving spending every minute with you guys.
You have a very jolly shirt on, yet you're angry.
Yeah, it's quite a jolly shirt for, 10:21 in the morning.
Why is this
11:21.
My shirt is... shirt is
Drew's
jolly...
going to throw me under the bus now.
You're wearing Armani Exchange in the studio.
It's a nice fabric. It's a nice fabric.
Hey, Richie goes to Vegas.
Yeah, it's from Vegas.
Well, I'm not surprised, but I mean, I'm wearing a flannel shirt.
Dude, did you get that shirt at Forever 21?
No, I didn't. That was the shirt. That was very clever, though. That's very clever.
I want to kiss you.
I don't want to kiss you.
Joe Namath.
I know what that was.
Drunk Joe Namath. That's a great drop.
Yeah.
Anyways, no. But in terms of the Phoenix news, I think a lot of this right now is made up, and people are, for example, the Reinsdorf information I think is relevant. I don't think he was going to buy it again. We're down the same road 2 years from now. Two years ago, we were down this road. Now we're back here again. Nothing's happened, guys. At the end of the day, nothing has happened. And so what do we expect is going to happen? We're going to expect this team is probably going to move. And if this team's, Atlanta's also an issue. Things are happening behind the scenes, clearly, in terms of making, alternate arrangements. The Phoenix market,
You know, one thing I'll say about the Phoenix market is if this city was so behind the team and wanted it so badly, why aren't you selling out these games? Why aren't you proving to a prospective owner that they could maybe not lose $40 million, they could maybe lose 15 or whatever it may be? And that's actually a significant difference.
I know, I know.
These people can write off their loss. You know, there's other ways to market the teams. I mean, you know, you look at the Blue Jays and there's a way to market the team if you're losing money and benefit out of it. So there are nobody in the city is doing that. Nobody's getting behind this team. And I don't want to hear the argument about, oh, you know, there's no owner. This team has been in the top five, or top six of the Western Conference for the past two seasons now. It's a good team. They aren't the young team they're rolling out there under Gretzky. They're the top five oldest teams in the National Hockey League. They're playing to win now, and you're not supporting them. So at the end of the day, this team is not going to stay there as far as I'm concerned. I just don't see how it happens.
Can we talk about the Eric Belanger thing now?
Let's do it.
I have something to say to Eric Belanger. I mean,
keep it clean.
You know,
keep it clean.
No, I am going to keep it clean. You're from Quebec. You're from Sherbrooke, Quebec, okay? So I can understand Eric Belanger's comments, if you didn't hear, were posted. And Eric Belanger basically said a lot of the players would rather go to Quebec City than Winnipeg, and he's entitled to his opinion.
Well, they're going both anyways, so.
But as far as him, you know, dissing Winnipeg and saying that there's nothing to do in Winnipeg, I think is completely disrespectful and a slap in the face to everyone in Winnipeg who, you know, we do have a lot at stake here.
The slap in the face is one thing. I mean, the slap in the face is fine. It's just, but the comment, when it's factually incorrect and it's ignorant, it's a whole separate thing.
Should Eric Belanger worry about securing a contract and actually having it signed?
Well, that would be a problem. If, you know, if you're such a good, maybe you should sign for longer than a one-year contract there,
no,
Eric
but
Belanger.
Remember what happened, right?
Yeah,
Washington,
because they realized that they can do better than Eric Belanger.
But, yeah, you know, Eric Belanger, I mean, you're a third line center, Max. Why don't you know, you can do some good things. Why don't you just relax and go play wherever that you're signed? And, you know, he says in the quote that he's spoken to people who played in Winnipeg. Well, who the heck is he even speaking to? No, there's only three guys in the league who have played in Winnipeg anymore.
What I told
Solani, Habib Bulin, and Doan. That's
what
it.
I was telling Richard, you know, is ask Timo Solani, ask Teppo Numanen, ask Eddie Olczyk if they liked their time in Winnipeg, ask Chris King if he liked his time in Winnipeg, ask Barry Melrose, anybody who's playing in Winnipeg, they'll tell you.
Barry Melrose?
Well, he said he loved playing in Winnipeg.
That was 1979.
Ask anybody that has played in Winnipeg, and they'll tell you that they love the fan support, they love the atmosphere. So Eric Belanger, sorry, but you're not speaking for the masses here.
You're also not speaking with any intelligence.
And guys, let's be honest here. You know, a guy from Winnipeg's more apt to want to play in Winnipeg. If you were to ask Jonathan Toews, would you rather play in Winnipeg or Quebec City?
Probably say Winnipeg.
If you're going to ask Eric Belanger, would you rather play in Quebec City or Winnipeg?
Absolutely. No disputing that, but you can make your point without denigrating the other side.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Zach in Toronto is on line one. Zach, welcome back to the program. I'm warning you, buddy. We were talking on Twitter this week. You're on a very short leash with me.
Well, Drew, you know, it's that time of year.
Yeah, I know. The election time. You don't want to. You get heated on the ice and you get heated in the election battle.
Hey now, Zach. Hey
Zachary,
now.
How are you on this Saturday morning?
I'm just fine, boys. Listen, I gotta ask a question that just blows my mind. Is all these Coyotes fans and, you know, Bettman, everyone says, you know, with the right ownership, it could work in Phoenix. Who the hell is Matthew Hollisizer?
Keep it clean.
What says that he can be a good owner? Is it his track record of owning sports franchises? Is it his professionalism when he writes letters to the Goldwater Institute?
Without spell check. Yeah, you know, Zach,
who is this guy?
It's a good point, Zach, and I mean, anybody who's going to buy this team right now has to be able to stomach big losses, and he can't. That's why he's trying to get somebody to finance it. So who's the guy is a good question. He's a guy who's obviously rich, but you have to be uber rich to own a team, you know, a pro hockey team or a pro football team or whatever it may be. You're right. Go ahead.
He's come in and he's been, you know, he's like pretended and he's positioned himself to be the white knight who just loves hockey and I'm going to save hockey in Phoenix. And everything that he has said and done throughout this whole process just completely contradicts that. So at this point, you know, I don't see how, I guess the NHL is desperate to keep the team in Phoenix, but they got to realize that this guy has no idea what he's doing either.
And you're exactly right. You'd want somebody, you know, and you weigh it that way, Zach, and you look at, okay, you have David Thompson and Mark Chipman, and then you have Matthew Hollisizer. Who do you want in this fraternity? And one thing also that we should take into account, if the NHL does sign a deal, a TV deal, which they're expected to in the month of April, if that accounts for Phoenix or no Phoenix, that argument goes out the window, right?
Mm-hmm. More people watch high school bowling in Phoenix than they watch hockey. I mean, come on.
Pete Weber?
I don't know if he's
Roy Munson?
Phoenix. Roy Munson, yeah. I don't think Roy Munson was an actual PBA bowler.
Roy Munson's from...
I know where he's from. He's from Kingpin.
Kingpin.
Yeah, good movie.
Yeah.
Very good movie. Zach, as always, we appreciate the
call.
Thanks,
Zach.
Thanks for not fighting with me this time.
Watch you back on Twitter, Drew.
I got you, brother.
By the way, Zach, Remus is thinking about making you your own intro music for every time you call
I
him,
like it.
Can I get the Illegal Curve Hotline intro music?
Yeah, we'll put it on next time.
Okay, next time, next week, Zach, you get the Illegal Curve Hockey. You'll get the Illegal Curve Hockey Hotline music.
All right.
Thanks, Zach. Guys, we've got to go to break. We have Chip Alexander on the line. For all those who are on the line, we apologize. For all those on the line, we're sorry we couldn't get to your calls. Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 11:30 in the morning. It's time to go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing?
We're doing very well, Chip. How are you doing? Big game tonight on the island, right?
It's going to be a big one. You know, everybody's been pointing to the game to tomorrow against Buffalo and in Raleigh, and certainly that's going to have a lot of ramifications on the standings, but the game tonight is just as important, and certainly the game Buffalo has in Washington is important to them, so first things first.
Chip, looking ahead to the remainder of the season, are you of the impression that the Hurricanes have to win out to get in, or do they have the margin of error to lose, say, one game?
I think there's a margin error. I think there is probably one game. I guess it was about 11 games to go. I was looking at 2009, and they finished 9-2, and that safely got them in the playoffs. And I was thinking, you know, 9-2 might do it again this year, and I've kind of had that in mind. And they won 5 out of 6, and that would mean they'd have to go 4-1 here the rest of the way. But I have a feeling that might do it. Especially with the uncertainty now with Ron Miller in Buffalo, so we'll just have to see.
Chip, can this season be considered a success if, you know, the Hurricanes get close but don't make the playoffs, you know, only because of the progression of the young players, especially somebody like Jeff Skinner?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're exactly right. You know, they have guaranteed a winning season now. They had a losing season last year. They went into this season really not knowing where they might finish or whether they could even have a winning season. In fact, I think a lot of us were looking at the team and some of the inexperience on the team and thinking they might be a 500 team. But certainly with Skinner now, possibly the rookie of the year, and, mm-hmm. and the development of players like Jamie McBain and some of the other younger guys, Brandon Sutter continues to get better. I just feel like this has really been a real growing year for the Hurricanes. And, you know, I think regardless of where they finish, they'll certainly be disappointed if they finish ninth, no doubt about it. But they will look at the positives of this season.
Chip, how quietly has Cam Ward once again been one of the top goaltenders in the NHL?
Well, he's one of those players that's kind of interesting. I've talked to Paul Maurice about it a couple of times, and sometimes you almost forget to ask about him after a game when he's had 38 or 39 saves because you almost take him for granted. And he's not the kind of goaltender that makes these spectacular saves. He kind of makes them look easy and routine, and sometimes he'll have these games where, certainly he'll make some big stops during the game that you notice, and you know he was a big part of the game, but you almost overlook him a little bit. But you know, he's on pace now to go over 70 games in a season, which he's never done before. So certainly he's had a really good year.
We're joined on the line by Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer. Chip, the Hurricanes, you know, the trade deadline was about a little over a month ago now. The Hurricanes were, you know, active at the deadline. They acquired Brian Allen. They acquired Corey Stillman. I mean, I think by law they have to acquire Stillman every year. I'm not sure. But, you know, how have those acquisitions helped them since the trade deadline?
Well, I think Corey Stillman, being the veteran that he is, was able to come into the room pretty easily. And same thing with Brian Allen, who's really a good guy and very easy to get to know and you know, a good guy in the room kind of thing. But Corey Stillman was on the team in 2006 when they won the Cup and stayed, you know, with the Florida Panthers. So certainly they were still very familiar with this game and felt like he could be effective. And certainly playing on the line with Eric Staal and on the power play, he just gives them another good playmaker they put into the mix there. And a guy who's pretty cool, you know, even in these tense games these last week or so, he seems to have been, you know, the guy with the real, real calm hand, a real calm head who just makes the plays. And Brian Allen has done exactly what they wanted him to do, come in and been a physical presence on the back end and helped out on the penalty kill.
And the team, Chip, the team hasn't exactly had the best starts. Last year was a disaster, obviously in terms of injuries, but just the start itself, and then, the Canes made a run. This year they're, you know, pushing in here to try and get into one of those, you know, those last playoff spots. Has Paul Maurice had an issue in terms of getting his team going before, you know, say, November, December?
Well, it's just, you know, last year was a very interesting season. There was a lot of veteran players, and they stacked up and went right to the salary cap and really felt like they could make a run at the Cup. But I don't think they realized how much the playoff run the year before had taken out of some of the older players. And mm-hmm. they just couldn't get going. And man, by the time they did, and, you know, they played it really well after, you know, 1st of December, but it was too late then, and they were playing catch-up. But this year, you know, I think Jim Rutherford has pointed out, going to Finland to start the season and getting those two wins over the Minnesota Wild just seemed to set the tone for this team. It got them off to a good start, a real rugged schedule, and they seem to build on that. They've had some ups and downs, which you would expect with this team. They're not a high-scoring team, and they've had some defensive issues, but you know, in the course of the season, it's all evened out, and I really think they're sitting about where they should be sitting right now.
Chip, we have to ask you about Jeff Skinner. You know, he's the odds-on favorite to win the Calder Trophy. He's 18 years old. You know, we've heard a lot about him up here, but can you talk about how, you know, the Carolina fans have embraced Jeff Skinner and how they're behind him to win the Calder Trophy?
Well, I can assure you that every radio interview that I've done has involved Jeff Skinner, so he's certainly a big topic, and certainly so. He's really been, you know, he came in, and I remember being at the draft in Los Angeles last summer when he was drafted and went backstage and took a look at him, and I said, holy mackerel, this guy looks like he's 14 years old.
Yeah,
you know,
does,
I mean,
yeah.
How long is it going to be before he's able to help out this team? And came in preseason training camp and just kind of really, you know, proved himself right off the bat and has been a really good player, obviously, for him. But, yeah, he's really, I think it really struck home during the All-Star game. And the 3 or 4 days around the All-Star break there when you had people lining up for blocks to get his autograph and really giving him, you know, I don't know if you'd call it teen idol status or rock star status or maybe a combination of the two, but they just fallen in love with this kid. And, you know, being the youngest player in the league has a part of it, too. I think I've written before in stories that sometimes when a bigger player from another team maybe puts a big hit on him or something, you see about, you know, it seems like 1,000 mothers in the stand that want to hop over the glass, you know, and go after the guy. So, but no, he is, you know, and he's proven himself. It's not just that he's a young guy out there playing and everybody's going, wow, look, there's an 18-year-old playing on the team. I mean, this guy has really proven that he can score in the National Hockey League, and certainly that you think, wonder what this kid will be like when he's 21 years old.
Yeah, you know, he might have 50 goal potential. We talked about Jeff Skinner right there, and you mentioned before Brandon Sutter and Jamie McBain, you know, really coming to their own. I want to ask you about two players who really haven't yet established themselves but could be keys for the Hurricanes moving forward, who've played about 20 games each. That's Drayson Bowman is one, and Zach Boychuk is the other. How would you say, I know the team has high hopes for both of those players, how would you say Jim Rutherford's, you know, thought of their play so far?
Well, he, you know, and Zach Boychuk's been up and down, and he's had his chances, and they still have high hopes for him. And I've talked to Zach several times, and Zach just, you know, has kind of said in not only exactly these words, but I need to grow up and really mature as a player and as a person and all this kind of stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think last year when he got sent down to the American League, he really kind of sulked about it a little bit, but I don't think he's done that this year. He's had a really good year for the Charlotte Checkers, and really, next year could be his year, you know. And Drayson Bowman's had some injuries this year. He had a knee injury that set him back for a while. He's with the team now. He's getting third-line minutes. And, you know, another Zach is Zach Dolpe that the team is very high on, and he's with the Checkers this year. And in talking to Jim Rutherford, he's still high on all three of those players. And certainly with some players coming up on contracts this year, I really feel like one or two of those guys is going to have a, you know, a starting role next year.
Chip, we'll let you go on this last question. You look at the Canes roster. To me, what jumps out to me is there really isn't that number one defenseman there. There's sort of, you know, a lot of guys who are playing, you know, twos, threes, fours, but there's not the shutdown number one defenseman. Is that something that the Canes need to target in the offseason? Somebody that can really either through the draft or free agency, you know, they can point to that's the guy who's going to be responsible for shutting down the opponent's top players?
You're exactly right. I think if you talk to management, they would probably say that a guy like Tim Gleason and Joe Corvo, those two would probably be a better, you know, a 3-4 than a 1-2, and that's kind of what they'd like the direction they like to go in. And I think they really are going to look very hard to try to get just the kind of player that you mentioned. And, you know, whether that means that Yoni Pikkanen will be re-signed for next year, I don't know. I mean, he's looking at signing a new contract, maybe $5 million a year, and I don't know that the Hurricanes will want to pay that. But that's a decision to be made after the season. But I know in talking to management that restructuring the defense is one of their top priorities.
Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, enjoyed it.
Thanks, Chip. Take care, Chip. Thanks very much. First time Chip's on. Gave some good analysis of the hurricane situation there. Really enjoyed that.
You know, they're an interesting team in that they're kind of like Ottawa, but more successfully built, kind of rebuilt on the fly there. From veteran to young and to a young squad, and they have guys drafted through. And Jimmy Rutherford, you know, give him credit. He went up there and he drafted Jeff Skinner. Jeff Skinner was rising up draft boards, but he went into the top 10. He said, "I'm going to take Jeff Skinner. I don't care what his ranking is."
Yeah.
And wow, has he proven to be have some nice foresight? Well, and his scouts mainly. But you know, one thing you should say about, you know, GMs drafting the first round pick: the GMs get to see the first round pick.
That's
second
right.
And third rounders probably don't see much.
They rely on
Rutherford
the scouts
had to play
that.
In this too. The scouts had to play in this. But hey, look at that draft pick compared to everybody else right now.
That's right. He's head and shoulders above, and he really
you know,
is.
You always, you know, you can, it's hard to say redraft a year later, because really redraft 5 years later.
Right.
But you redraft a year later.
But it looks like they got a building block they can build that franchise around, and he's a, and you know, he's really captured the imagination of the Carolina market, which
you
is
you redraft
big.
A year later, so you go third?
Probably right now.
So
probably right now, and he's really the billboard for that team right
he
now.
He hasn't worn down. I mean, that's maybe one of the benefits of having played in the OHL long season there.
That's right, they're used to the 82-game season. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 11:45 Saturday morning. One final segment to wrap up the program. You know it, you love it, it's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Let's start with Todd Bertuzzi. He was given a 5-minute major and a game misconduct for his hit on Blackhawks forward Ryan Johnson. After the game, Bertuzzi was apologetic, saying, "I thought he was in a really bad spot, so I tried to ease up. I went in with my side and tried to hit him with my butt in the stomach. If I went straight on, I could have hit him pretty hard, but I just wanted to make sure he was all right." By saying that he tried and successfully eased up on the hit, has Todd Bertuzzi eliminated the "I couldn't stop myself" excuse after an act is perpetrated of on-ice violence?
Well, I mean, that question's an interesting question, Drew. I mean, if you move as slowly as Todd Bertuzzi does, you can probably always stop yourself. In all honesty, I'm not trying to be, you know, I'm not trying to be facetious there. I think that Bertuzzi moves slowly. And so can he stop himself? Yeah, he probably stopped himself. He can lighten up a bit. Some other players who are going 110 miles an hour, even if they can try to stop themselves, it doesn't matter because they're just going so fast. So, I mean, that's a yes or no, I think, in terms of that. I thought the hit itself wasn't, he apologized. He went into the room after to tell him that he was apologized, and Johnson said he didn't do it by accident. It was, you know, men acting like men. It wasn't deliberate. He lost. He got kicked out of the game. I was fine with the no suspension there. I didn't think it was a headshot, so to speak.
No, I thought the most interesting part is that he said that he didn't try and pulverize the guy, which I mean...
It happened more than you think, Drew. I mean, you just don't... Every incident doesn't end up in an injury.
Well, I didn't know where I was on the ice. I didn't, the game is too fast. You hear lots of excuses. You never hear a guy actually say... This is the first time you hear a guy say, "Hey, you know, I didn't mean to hit him the way I did, and it could have been worse, but I eased up." So I thought that was very interesting.
This was blown out of proportion. I agree with Richie 100%. He wasn't trying to pulverize him. He got the 5-minute penalty. There was no need for suspension. I think the most common thing that we're seeing in hockey now is guys that are guarding the puck with their back towards the corner of the boards or on the or the mid boards, Richie. And now these guys are starting to get hit and.
Players putting themselves in a vulnerable position.
Players putting themselves in the vulnerable position. And I think that now that this game has opened up and players are faster than ever, we're going to start to see these again and again. And it's difficult, but players are going to have to do a little bit better of a job of protecting themselves, especially defensemen, because we're seeing these on a nightly basis. Me and Richie saw this when we coached. I'm sure people are seeing this when they see any level of hockey. It's just one of those things where players have to be careful. You know, the player going into the boards has to be careful, and the player that's about to hit the guy has to be careful. But something that, you know, is another thing, you talk about headshots, but no-touch icing. You know, we were watching, me and Richie were at the Wheat Kings game, WHL game at the MTS Center. no-touch icing is something that you know I'm pretty in favor of as far as the NHL level goes.
Yeah, they have to do that. They should have put that in years ago, but they should do it, or at the very least the modified one. The New York Rangers, Islanders, and Devils chapters of the Professional Hockey Writers Association have decided not to vote on the NHL awards in protest of Christopher Botta having his credentials pulled by the New York Islanders earlier this season.
Good for them.
Now that it's affecting end-of-year awards voting, do you think the NHL should have done more to try and rectify that situation?
Absolutely. I mean,
you changed the question?
I did change the question because it just broke this morning that the Devils and the Islanders Writers Associations joined in with that boycott. But it was a different question than earlier.
Well, I first say that the Tortorella's in the running for Coach of the Year.
Right.
So I'm not necessarily sure that the Rangers, that, you know, they pulled out just because of Lundqvist's being voted on by the GMs.
The previous question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it too late? No, I think this is a suitable response. I think that this is something that should happen more often. So then Botta would have been treated, you know, maybe the truth is they have the power now that they maybe didn't have before. What could they have done at the time it happened?
Well, I'm saying, should Gary Bettman have gotten involved more quietly, not publicly, but quietly to come to a resolution when you got the New York Islanders, one of his franchises, and you have Chris Botta, a guy from writes for the New York Times and used to work for the team?
Well, I mean, shouldn't Bettman have gotten involved years ago when Charles Wong started running this team into the ground?
Well, a fair point. I mean,
my point is, Drew, is if he doesn't get involved in the running of the team on a day-to-day basis, you know, in terms of how it's looked at in the scope of the National Hockey League, why would he get involved when a PR guy gets fired? This team is a joke.
So
the organization's a joke. It's tough. I like a lot of the players in the team. But it's run like a minor league, like a minor league franchise.
Yeah! Ezzy, any more on that? Are you good?
I respect what they've done. I think it's great. They're standing up for one of their own. And you know, Chris Botta, the story is that it was a bit of an unfair move. So, you know, hopefully he's back to covering the Islanders for the team, right? That's what's happened. And, you know, good for them for doing this, supporting them.
The Mount Royal Cougars defeated the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology Trojans 1-0 in the final of the Alberta Colleges Athletic Conference Championship.
Drew, question alert.
ACAC, the ACAC Championship. However, the game was ordered to be replayed by the ACAC commissioner because the Mount Royal backup goaltender was a part-time student and thus ineligible. Upon appeal, the initial result of the game was upheld, and Mount Royal was officially declared champion. Do you think the game should have been replayed because of the ineligible backup goaltender, or was justice served in the end?
I think justice was served in the end. I mean, I don't think the game needed to be replayed.
Why didn't they catch that before that he was a part-time? I don't understand. Like, who's checking the rosters here?
I really don't know about the specific rules.
Was he rostered the whole year? I mean, there's a lot of questions.
No, he was their third-string goaltender. Apparently, their first stringer was injured.
Okay.
So their backup went in to be the starter.
Okay.
And then they had to get a backup to the previous backup, and the guy they found was only officially only a part-time student. Okay. So he was declared ineligible.
The truth is, when you can't, you know, when he didn't even play it didn't affect the outcome of the game, I'm happy that it was upheld. Some of these rules are ridiculous. I mean, all those part-time student. Okay, so he's in three classes, not four. And that's the main thing here. And I understand the concept of that rule, but if they're, you know, this isn't like these leagues are loaded with goaltenders here.
Yeah.
You know, clearly, the third string goaltender was somebody. If you're third string goaltender on the ACAC championship, I mean, you're probably pretty good, but you're not going anywhere.
Right.
So let's be rational, and they were rational here.
Yeah. Ultimately, they were rational after the commissioner tried, after the appeal. I mean, the commissioner...
Yeah, these rules are crazy. I mean, it's...
Ridiculous!
You're saying, who cares? It's the ACAC championship,
not
right?
Not just that, Drew. I just think some of these rules are just put in place, and, I mean, why wasn't it... My question is, why weren't these things dealt with before the game was played?
That's a
fair point. Where's the commissioner of the league before? Oh, are you sure all your rosters have been approved? Do we have approved... You know, like, why... And then you come back later, and then you hold the... The team is going to probably do, I know a similar situation in the Winnipeg Minor Hockey Association this year, a goalie playing forward in a playoff game, and that's against the rules, and the team lost, they won the game, but they lost because the rule was broken. I mean, what, would you rather the kid, play on the bench? I mean, I don't necessarily understand. Some of the rules, the thought process behind it seems odd to me.
Too much bureaucracy.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah, that's one of my big pet peeves in the minor hockey across Canada.
In an interview this week, Canucks backup goaltender Corey Schneider said he is happy with his role on the team and is happy as a backup for now. Schneider is 15-3-2.
That's ridiculous. Just as an aside, that's a ridiculous record.
In 22 starts this year with a .930 save percentage and a 2.16 goals against average. If you are a goaltender-needy team this offseason, what would you offer the Canucks for Corey Schneider?
Richie, I just want to jump in here really quickly. Corey Schneider's too good to be a backup. I'm sorry. This guy was amazing for the Moose. He's too good to be a backup, even if you're on Vancouver.
You're a general manager. What do you offer for him, Ezra?
Okay. I'm going to throw this out here, and Richie might have a different opinion. I think he deserves, at this, what is he, 25 years old, first full NHL season. Well, not first full NHL season, but first year
first
on a full-time
NHL,
roster.
First NHL season.
I think, he's got to be worth something like $3 or $4 million.
No. He's not a free agent. How much do you offer to trade for him?
Oh, he's not a free agent. Sorry about that.
You're going to want a first-round
pick. I would have to think a first-round draft pick at the very minimum, and maybe even another forward or defenseman to go with that draft pick.
So
I think he's that good.
That's what you would give up as a general manager.
I think he's that good. 15-3-2. I mean, yeah, you're on the Canucks, but I mean, on the Moose, he was unbelievable. High save percentage numbers. But yeah, I think first round draft pick and a player probably.
Richard, you're the GM.
Vancouver right now, the market as it is, you're probably not going to get good value for him. So I probably wouldn't trade him. Hypothetically, if you are looking for something for him, you'd probably want a first round pick, which would be within the top 20, and then whatever else you can get.
Okay. Final question here in Rapid Fire. It's election time in Canada, so let's finish off this section of the show with a completely subjective question. Which current NHL player do you think would have a good future as a Canadian politician?
Desi, your thoughts?
Ray Emery. I don't know. There's a lot.
Why? Because he's good at fighting?
Isn't Trevor Linden supposed to be a
current NHL player?
He kind of had some politics. Falling out with the PA there. I'll go first. Clearly, you didn't plan for the show. Actually, I'm not going to lie. I probably didn't plan just like as he did for this question. The other questions, of course, I did. Mike Camilleri would be a smooth cat. Wouldn't he be good? So likable, friendly. Speak both languages now. That's a big asset, Drew.
It is a big asset.
I think Mike Camilleri would be a pretty, pretty, pretty good nominee.
What about Timu Solani in Winnipeg?
He's Canadian, though, doesn't he?
No, you don't have to be Canadian.
I like that.
You can be a foreign. You can run for prime minister.
Well,
and not,
Sam
not
Cates
be born
was born
here.
In Israel, so
Arnold Schwarzenegger was born in Manitoba, wasn't he?
No, that's actually not the case. But as you don't have an
Timu Solani for mayor, premier, whatever he wants to be, prime minister.
You can't go wrong with any Timu Solani
ambassador,
right now, can you?
No, really, you can't. Could the answer to any?
We
didn't
even
questions.
Talk about how amazing he's been. But we talk about it every week.
We talk about it every week. I mean, it really is astounding how good he is. That's it for Rapid Fire, Tim. Let's go to Cheers and Jeers and wrap up the show.
Cheers.
Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra.
Hi,
cheer. Jeer.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I'm going to cheer Jerome Ginla. He got his 1,000th... That's hard to say. He got his 1,000th point last night. 3 points, 2 goals, 39 goals on the year. Cheer, because that's an accomplishment. He's a definite Hall of Famer. Love him. Great player. Good for him.
That's a lot of short, choppy sentences.
My cheer, Drew, this week is going to Bill McCreary.
Yes.
Final game over the weekend here. Bill McCreary is one of my favorite referees. He did Canada 2002, did the final there. I always liked him. He seemed like he had a good communication with both teams. The players respected him. Some people didn't like him. I thought he was one of the best officials I ever saw. Played it down the middle. Had a presence. And you know what? One of the last officials who had their name on the back of the jersey
that's
who you
right.
could identify with. Now you really people know some of the referees, but not a lot of them. And he had that charisma for an official, which is rare.
Plus, he had that mustache.
You could one of the best mustaches ever.
Yeah, exactly.
So you used to have a ref uniform with your name on it.
It's true. I did. I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers this week by jeering whomever impersonated Braden Schenn on Facebook. Somebody went on Facebook and impersonated Braden Schenn.
I was actually Facebook friends with that account.
Well, you probably shouldn't be because the guy went and made some racist comments and they were attributed to Braden Schenn, and it's not his real Facebook. That's garbage. No need for that. I mean, he's a kid. Not that it's appropriate at any age, but he's a kid, and there's no place for that. You know, stop impersonating people on Twitter and on Facebook, unless you're obviously not the real person, like fake Braden Schenn, whatever. fake Barry Bonds. That's
fake
okay.
Drew Mandel.
Fake Drew Mandel. Those are good parody accounts. But other than that, there's no place for that, especially with the racial component. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com and Forbes Magazine. Big thank you to James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. Big thank you to James Myrtle.